Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. So today we're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, first of all, I think would be best if you start with telling people what exactly the Maine Community Health Options is.
Great, David. Well, we're a new nonprofit health insurance issuer in the state of Maine. We received our license earlier this year, and we're offering products both on the individual and small group exchange, the marketplace, and also off the exchange. So we are thrilled to be here in Maine servicing the needs of Maine people and businesses across the state.
That's an interesting time to be coming out and doing healthcare with all the changes that's going on and happening with Obamacare and so forth. Why exactly did a new health plan be needed at this point?
It's a great question, David. There is a real lack of competition on the individual side of the equation. And the exchange, the marketplace, is really meant to address that, but you have to have qualified health plans and insurance carriers willing to service that segment of the marketplace. So we stepped up as a consumer-operated and oriented plan, a co-op, with the real desire to address both the cost issues and the quality issues that we think we can positively affect as an insurance issuer.
To start off and start with the basics here,
sure.
Maybe you can explain what a co-op is, kind of explain what this whole plan is all about. I mean, you're going to be competing against the giants out there, right? The Aetnas, the Blue Cross Blue Shields. And people might say, well, what exactly is a co-op? What exactly is this in terms of what I could buy into?
Sure, that's great. Co-op is simply put is a consumer led and is member led. So our subscribers, our members, are directing the plan by virtue of their election. They are voting for the board of directors, and so the board is also comprised of members of the plan. So there's a real accountability to the membership. We're also a nonprofit; can't ever be sold, our assets transferred, or acquired. So we are always going to be held in that public trust here in the state. And so those are the basic elements of a co-op.
So to clarify just a little bit, to make sure anybody listening would understand, anybody that becomes a member of this co-op or buys insurance through it has a say or has a vote, if you want to call it, in terms of the direction and focus of this organization. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So how do you manage that? How does somebody say, okay, so I'm one of 600, one of 6,000, one of whatever. Mm-hmm. How does that really get managed from a real overview? Because really one of the advantages of having a company, you would say, is that they would know how to do this. You know, someone individual may not know best what is out there in terms of the marketplace. How are you going to handle that type of situation so that they keep informed?
Absolutely. That's great, David, because it's really high in our minds right now and as we gear up for membership. So as people enroll, and we'll get into some of those details over the coming months, they'll be aware of the opportunity at the end of 2014 to engage in the whole election process. We have top-tier management, so in terms of the operations of the plan, everyone should be rest assured that we have the wherewithal to be stewards and the high-caliber expertise required to manage the plan. Where the consumers, where the members come in is really that governance structure and ensuring that the policies and the direction of the plan are consistent with what the members are looking for in this nonprofit vehicle for insurance coverage.
Okay, so we've kind of explained what it is. How is it different than a plan from, one of the big three, if you want to call it, that's out there? How is it different from them?
Well, one is that governance structure and the fact that we're a nonprofit domiciled that is stationed here, we're incorporated here in Maine, that our focus is entirely on the state of Maine, I think that's also another distinction, that we have our call center and our base of operations in Lewiston. So again, by Maine people, for Maine people.
Only Maine people? Can't be out of state? Or can it be?
Well, we do have out-of-state coverage, so we have a broad network that covers people wherever they may travel. But our focus is on the businesses and people here in Maine.
So can members be from New Hampshire, Mass, California?
I suppose they could be if their employer resides here in the state of Maine.
Okay, so it's based on where the employer resides.
Right.
Okay, is that their headquarters or is that their satellite?
That's a great question, and I'd have to double check on that. But I believe it would just need to be whoever wherever the tax ID number is wherever that's connected to. So I would imagine, a small group that would there could be situations where it might be a satellite or some component part of a larger business.
So this is for individual coverage. Does it also cover group coverage in terms of, an employer's plan, or is it just for individuals? I want to make sure I'm clear on exactly how this operates.
Right. It's both for individuals and for businesses, for groups. We're focused presently on groups of 50 or fewer, but we are willing to serve large group insurance, large group across the state of Maine. But the initial focus is really both the on-exchange and off-exchange for small group.
Okay, great. Non-profit healthcare versus for-profit healthcare, why would it matter?
It matters because at the end of the year, any net revenues we have will be plowed back into reducing the premium for the next year and or increasing the benefits. And, of course, we also have a significant loan to repay the federal government, which has allowed us to get started. But that nonprofit status held in perpetuity is going to mean that every dollar spent spent with the purpose of achieving the triple aim, reducing healthcare costs, achieving better health outcomes, and any net revenues get plowed back into the plan.
All right, so two clarifications just to make sure, because I'm pretty sure I heard you say that if somebody was to join the plan, they still will be able to have health care if, for example, they get hurt traveling somewhere, whether it's overseas, whether it's in the U.S. or wherever. And so that plan would be accepted at major hospitals, small clinics, wherever it would be, kind of like you would have with if you're using Blue Cross as an example, as a network across the world. So is that kind of how that works, and is there partnerships with other organizations to make that work, or how does that come together?
Yes, we do have a partnership with First Health in order to have that travel network in place, and so people will have that peace of mind even when they're outside of the state of Maine.
Okay, great. So tell me a little bit about what you think this is going to do to the healthcare market here in Maine. I certainly know from CMA, Career Management Associates, as a employer of a number of people under the 50 mark. I know the healthcare costs, and I certainly know that they are much higher than if you would say New Hampshire, for example, because of the competition situation. It's just the facts in terms of I did a plan in both states, and I know that honestly, last year it was almost 50% less if I wanted to go to New Hampshire and base it out of there. It's a crazy amount of money difference. So what do you see as this being something that the Maine people can look at and say, how will this make this cheaper?
It's going to make it cheaper because of the competition at the front end. Over the long haul, though, it's going to come down to the benefits that we have, the incentives that we have, how we engage with our members, how we engage providers, because we have to change the cost escalation here that we've been experiencing. Out of the gate, we have two things we have to uphold. One is the so-called benchmark plan, and that is given to all the qualified health plans on and off the marketplace in the fully insured guaranteed issue market. And then we also have to adhere to the metallic tiers, the actuarial values set, bronze, silver, gold, that people may have heard of. And so between those two, they really dictate the parameters of the plan designs that people will be seeing. But aside from that, we can certainly and have been able to affect some savings in terms of the overhead and administrative costs by being as nimble and as lean as we can, and then look to future years to dropping cost of care, not by cutting rates, but rather by paying attention to smart utilization of our resources, really affecting better health outcomes.
My understanding is that administrative costs in the Affordable Care Act are pretty much set. In other words, you can only use whatever percentage it is, and I don't remember if it's 2 or 3%, whatever the amount is, and then the rest has to be returned. And we saw this in some of the major healthcare companies across the country have had to either do rebates or they've restructured to really get their administrative costs down. My question is because it appears that that has almost been a level, you know, it's a level playing field in terms of that. You believe that your costs will be even below that level to be able to take the amount of administrative costs even smaller? And how do you maintain that while the growth of the organization continues in terms of hiring people, in terms of everything that has to go along with that?
No, that's a great question. It's true. We have a minimum in terms of what they call a medical loss ratio. So the percentage of every dollar that has to be spent on actual claims. At the individual, an individual small group, it's set at 80%. In large group, 85%. So there are, and that's an important consumer protection, and consumer being both individuals and businesses. I think we can do a better job within even that corridor of the non-medical loss ratio, so the 20% and the 15%, of using those dollars effectively to have a positive impact on health outcomes. So whether it's our care management approach, which we'll talk about, or how we use our data to both inform providers and members. So that at the end of the day, we're not just rearranging the chairs, but really affecting better utilization.
It's my understanding that individual or small group rates, or not even small group, individual rates under 50, when you're talking small group or individual rates, are going to be assessed on a per-person basis. In other words, even if you have a small group, each individual person will be assessed individually. And that includes dependents in terms of if they're in that, which in the current marketplace, if you're an employer, that doesn't work that way, but that's what's coming in the future. How do you see that affecting the cost structure in terms of organizations that are looking at now rates that are not going to be based upon a group rate, but really the individuals within that group, and that could change the structure and cost from a company standpoint?
Right. I'm not sure. I mean, there is going to be some who see price increases as a result of that, and some who will see some decreases. And the base rate may be affected as a result as well. So individuals could potentially see a lessening of that rate, where in the past they were subsidizing essentially a family unit. So there are going to be some winners and losers in that regard right out of the gate. Over the long haul, you know, I hope that we can modulate the impact of that and really bring down the costs of care. So we are going to see some variation as a result of this change. It's really an administrative change that reflects demographics and the costs of care related to age and residence.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis. He's the CEO of Maine Community Health Options. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money.
Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of people on the show talking about the Affordable Care Act, and this is probably the first time I've had somebody on that's actually going to have a new plan on the exchange. And so while the audience may have heard what the exchange may be, they may not really know what this whole marketplace exchange is all about. So could you take a few minutes and maybe explain to everybody what is this new marketplace that's coming? And then we can talk about how they will go to it, what it's all going to be about. Because I do know Maine is going to be using the federal marketplace and not their own marketplace, and people may not really understand the whole process.
Sure. The health insurance marketplace was designed to create competition, choice, and clout, particularly for the individual and small group market. And in the past, those were the segments of the market that typically got the worst deal, if you will. And so now with the attention to some of these changes that are coming as of January 1st, we're seeing greater comparability of plans across an array of choices, and the competition that will only grow, I believe, over time will allow for the market to really work on behalf of individuals and small groups. So we're pleased to be part of that competition equation coming into existence here in time for the marketplace, and think that we have some good choices for people to look at.
So when somebody is saying to themselves, okay, I'm an individual, I don't necessarily have health care today, or I'm an individual and I work for a company and they're going to either send me to the marketplace rather than provide health care, what do they do? How do they know where this is? It's kind of like right now this kind of pie in the sky thing that a lot of people are talking about, and you hear on the news, you hear on the radio, but you really don't know what to do about it.
Well, two great places for people to go to learn more at their own leisure. One is healthcare.gov, and the other is our website, maineoptions.org. So healthcare.gov is the single hub that the Department of Health and Human Services has put up for people to look at what's coming by way of the health insurance marketplace. And on our website, maineoptions.org, people can take a look at our plan offerings and use our decision support tools, which will guide them towards a plan that's best for them and their families.
Will it have other options from other carriers on there, or is it just going to be yours? In other words, how does somebody, and maybe you have the answer for this, maybe you don't, how does somebody evaluate three or four different plans? Do they have to go to every one of the sites? I mean, one of the things that I had heard from the marketplace is you should have one-stop shop. So you should be able to go one place and be able to see all the plans, all the connections. I don't know if that's going to be realistic or if right now we need to look at all three sites and bring it all together. How is that going to play together?
Well, that is the purpose of the marketplace. And so people should go to healthcare.gov, and the metallic level designs of the plans, bronze, silver, gold, and so forth, allow for that ease of comparability. And I always encourage people to go to our site to get further detail in terms of if you like what you see on healthcare.gov or want to come to us independently, by all means, you can take a peek at the benefit design and some of the greater intricacies of our plan offerings.
Okay. So the marketplace is going to open. You're going to be there. There'll be a number of other carriers, of course, that will be there. And so they'll look at the cost, and will somebody just make a decision, hey, that's my plan, click on it, and how does it get billed, how does it get invoiced, how do people get cards? I'm talking about some of the basic things that are in people's minds, right? At the end of the day, it's all about me, okay? It's all about me. What do I have to deal with? What is the paperwork I have to go through? What is the... how long is it going to take to get a card? How long is it going to... All that's big stuff. I'll talk about doctors in a second. That's going to be a second issue. But how does all the mechanics work?
Well, the mechanics, from our perspective, are going to work as seamlessly and as fluidly for the member as possible. One thing to note is the advantage of the advanced premium tax credits, this subsidy that's been talked about, is that's payment up front that people don't have to worry about. So that their premium responsibility is going to be net of that subsidy or that advanced premium tax credit. Now, come tax time, that has to be reconciled, and people will have to make sure that they're prepared for that. But that is a real asset or attribute of the marketplace. In terms of our issuing cards and so forth, that will occur much like it does today. So people get a welcome packet, and they'll have the card in hand and be ready for January 1st coverage.
Coverage and rollout. You talked a little bit about this subsidy. And before we get into the doctors and all that, explain the subsidy, explain how long it goes for, explain what it really is.
Well, you're right. The subsidy is designed to cover or is applicable for people between the poverty level and four times the poverty level, which for a family of four ranges from just over $40,000 up to $90,000 family income per year. And for an individual, ranges up to about $44,000. So it's a significant benefit. Covers about two-thirds of the population of the state of Maine. It's only applicable for individuals and families on the health insurance marketplace, so it does not apply to the shop, the small group offering on the marketplace. For the shop, there are tax credits that go to the employer, but the subsidy is only on the individual side. So that lessens the burden in terms of the premium on a month-to-month basis. Another piece that should be pointed out is the cost share reductions. So people below 250% of the federal poverty level are eligible for cost share reductions, which can bring down the financial burden of accessing the healthcare system as they use the healthcare system.
So employers, we have heard, and actually I know of some, have said they're not going to continue to give or provide health insurance. Some have made that decision for whatever reason. Right or wrong, that's their choice. They have the right to do that. And they're going to send their employees to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I assume as an individual is what they will come in at. Is that a smart decision? Is that a decision where the employee actually makes out better because of these subsidies? I'm talking in generals here. Or is it better for the company? I'm trying to understand from a perspective of an actual plan, what is actually better?
That's a tough one to answer because it's going to vary from business to business and depends on where they're at now and where they want to get to. It depends on the size of the group. The shop tax credit is available for groups that are 25 or fewer. And the average income has to be $50,000 or less. The maximum credit accrues to those groups that are 10 or fewer and have average income of $25,000 or less. So we're talking about truly small businesses that get the maximum benefit there. But it's something certainly to look at in comparison to the tax deductibility of health benefits today. And so one has to compare the value of those two different avenues. Seeding employees to the individual marketplace is another relevant strategy, and that should also be modeled out. And perhaps if there's already a contribution to benefits, that contribution could be made in a way that's still pre-tax and benefits the employees, but on a different basis.
Okay. I guess the big question that comes up is, and you hear a lot about it in the national news, is will you be able to keep your doctor? Right? Will you be able to keep your provider that you have currently? And there's a lot of debate on yes or no, and certainly not going to ask you to wade into the politics of this. Mm-hmm. But the reality is Maine people will say, or people across the country will say, I love my doctor, I like my doctor, I have a trust factor there. Mm-hmm. Will I be able to, if I switch plans, one of the main reasons people don't switch, of course, is they like who they have, they like what's going on, and they don't want to change it. Why and how would somebody make that decision if they can't keep the doctor? I don't know. But the fact is what is the plan going to do about that? What is your organization looking at that? And do you have the same type of network as some of the big networks that are out there?
The short answer is yes, we do. And people will be able to keep their doctor. From the very beginning, our strategy has been a broad, inclusive network. And we've been very well received by providers across the state. So we're rounding out that network construction now, and we'll have that robust network for people to choose from. To the extent that anybody finds that their particular provider is not part of our network, we would certainly want to get that information and approach the provider and work towards inclusion in our network. We want to make sure that access to coverage equates to access to care. And that preference in terms of provider is really important to us.
Will you have a cost structure that says, like most plans, in-network it's one thing, out-of-network it's another thing? Is that still going to be what's out there in terms of your organization as well?
Yes. Yeah, we have a differential between in and out of network. But again, we're really looking for people to have assignment or a real medical home. So to have identified a primary care provider and establish that relationship and use that relationship to positively influence the trajectory of their own health care.
Do you see a challenge in terms of individuals who may not have a primary care doctor? You know, one of the things you see is that especially young people don't have primary care doctors. They haven't assigned themselves one. Heck, I'm fine. Why would I assign myself one? Do you assign one for them? Do they have to select one? How does that process work?
We will assign one for members that don't have a PCP selection. It's not a requirement per se in terms of coverage, but we think it's so important in terms of the value of the benefits that we offer and what someone can really get out of the healthcare system to have that relationship, that trusted relationship, and to utilize it so that when people are in crisis or in need of resolution of something that's more acute, they already have that established base to turn to.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options. We've had a great segment talking about what it's all about. Come back and find out about your doctor.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options. We're talking about the new healthcare marketplace, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. That's what we're talking about today. Kevin, this has been fun. We're getting some real good information out to the viewers. And I think that, you know, what you're talking about is real and what's happening. And I think that, you know, everybody should be paying attention because they're going to know what to do when, you know, when now that this is all rolled out in terms of what's happening. All right. So we ended the segment last time talking about if they wanted their own doctor, they'd be able to have their own doctor. Let's talk a little bit about specialists. Let's talk about, I mean, I recognize this is more like a PPO plan. So talk a little bit about if somebody wants to go to a certain specialist and they get referred, will they be covered? Are there some things that won't be covered? How will that whole thing work in terms of the, you know, a person who has an issue or a concern? And I mean, with a healthcare company now, they would make decisions based on underwriting and so forth. Is this the same thing?
Yes, absolutely the same thing. And we do include in our network a broad array of specialists, and people can avail themselves of specialists. We do have, as fairly standard in today's marketplace as well, higher copays for use of specialists. And wherever we could and wherever we can, we're trying to bring the costs and the out-of-pocket spending into the realm of copays to incent that access to care, so it's not all dropping to deductible. Oftentimes, in today's marketplace, we find costs are only covered once the deductible is met. We wanted to get beyond that and really help people with today's spending to the extent that we're able to get access to care and get people on the right side of disease management, for instance.
So you're talking about copays, you're talking about deductibles. We see a lot of health savings accounts currently that cover typically deductibles that are out there. Will these plans have the option for that, or how will it be determined if somebody can use a health savings account? Kind of talk about that whole process.
Right, and we created our plans with the purpose of having both value-based insurance design as well as a health savings account compatibility. So on the health savings accounts, we'll have bronze as well as silver level plans that people can choose and really bring their HSA with them so that they can continue on with what I think is a very smart approach to normalizing the cost of care and really being rewarded at the end of the year should their own utilization accrue to their benefit.
Talk to me about value, because you just mentioned value care. So tell me a little bit about what that means, because it almost sounds like you're going to Walmart.
Right. Well, value-based insurance design has been around as a term within the industry for a little while, and it really means paying for what matters and putting incentives in the right place. We're incentivizing use of generic drugs. We still cover preferred brand specialty drugs, but we're shouldering more of the burden, the financial burden, for generic drugs. The value-based insurance design we offer has a disease-specific component, and also a behavioral health integration component. And then we also have a very aggressive tobacco cessation program. On the disease management side, we focus on four chronic conditions: asthma, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, and hypertension. Those four conditions amount to quite a bit of expense, both for people and for businesses in the state. So by helping people access care and helping people follow through on care plans, our hope is that it will reduce the costs of hospitalization, rehospitalization, ER visits. And so we do that in a variety of ways, but it's on the benefit side and by Maine Community Health Options, the company, picking up more of the financial burden for that care.
Are there caps? Is there a cap to the amount that people can take out of the system?
There is no cap. That's a great point, that with the reforms in place starting on 1/1/14, there's no lifetime maximum. And it's guaranteed issue. So this is something that's going to be reflected in the premium pricing. So too is the out-of-pocket maximum in the course of the year. So across all of our plans, the maximum amount that a person would pay is $6,350. For the silver and gold plans, some of those out-of-pocket maximums are less than that. So that's something to look at when you're people are evaluating plan designs. You know, not only the premium, not only the deductible and the coinsurance, but what is the true out-of-pocket maximum?
What services do these plans contain? Prescription, dental, you know, health, wellness. What exactly are in these plans? If somebody's looking at it, you're talking about from a cost perspective, no problem. It's pretty easy to figure out costs. But sometimes people look at plans at the different companies and they go, well, this covers this and this doesn't cover this. But how do you evaluate that? So what are some of the plans in terms of what they cover?
One of the attributes of the ACA is that we have this thing called a benchmark plan. So all the plans are going to cover a very rich array of benefits. And everything you mentioned is going to be covered, but for dental. Pediatric dental is not included because people can seek out other coverage on the marketplace for that dental benefit. But otherwise, there's a real focus on ensuring that there's broad coverage. For us, like, we go even further with that value-based insurance design, with the behavioral health integration. So the first three visits that a person utilizes of behavioral health, we pick up the entire cost. There's no copay. This mirrors what we have experienced in the business world with EAP, and it's been effective there. We think it's should be brought to individuals and small groups, you know, across the state. And so the early access to behavioral health, whatever the concern might be, has proven effective in terms of stemming acute crises downstream. But back to your question, you know, it's a very broad array of coverage that everyone is required to provide.
So it's going to be kind of, if I'm looking at the marketplace, there'll be some basics. And so we're really looking at what the additionals per each plan are, right, to really judge what we perceive as being the best value for the dollar past the basics. Right. So everybody will have the basics, and then it's whatever additions that we throw on there that will be the value adds for each plan, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So if you're looking at this plan and you're a consumer and you're trying to determine what's best for you, what are four or five key things that you would say to the person on the street? What are four or five things that are like the top tips of things to look at and say these are the five things you must look for in a plan?
Well, first and foremost on everyone's mind is the premium price. And so we've worked hard to come in at competitive rates, and we think we've accomplished that. Secondly, I think it's important in terms of the customer service, knowing that not only are we based and rooted here in Maine, but that we are working very closely with providers across the state in support of care management. So that may not be something that's visible, certainly behind the scenes, we're providing information and support for that care management at the local level that everyone will enjoy. The third thing, I think, is our nonprofit status, knowing that at the end of the day, net revenues are being plowed back into their plan. So they own the plan by virtue of being subscribers and in a sense of being it's member-led. They are directing the policies and the future of the plan. And then last, I would say, making sure people are aware of the network of providers and that how inclusive is that network. Will they have to travel far distances, or will they be able to access care closer to home? Our network design is meant to enable that local access to care.
One of the questions that gets asked is, why do rates vary so much from place to place? And I know that in the materials I've seen, you're talking about the state of Maine, for example, is broken up into four geographic rating areas. And I'm sure this is across the country, all these different rating areas. People talk about the two Maines. Now we're talking about the four Maines. What exactly is the difference, really, when you're talking about that? Why are there differences? And how does that affect rates?
Well, there are true differences in the costs incurred at different geographies of the state. So we have these four rating areas that are a reflection of utilization in the total costs of care. That's a function of just where we are today. My hope is that we'll be able to positively impact where we have in every geographic rating area, but particularly where we have higher costs of care, to work with that within those areas to reduce those costs and normalize the experience across the state. So that's going to take tremendous involvement of the providers, of the members, and use of technology, frankly, to help in certain parts of the state where access is more difficult. We have a more rural or an infrastructure that has, by definition, a greater amount of overhead, for instance.
Well, it's interesting because I think employers and individuals would say, if I am a baker in Aroostook County and I'm a baker in York County, I do the same job, why should I be penalized for living in Aroostook County versus living in York, Maine? And I know this isn't, necessarily you have an answer for that because that's the way it was set up. But it is a fundamental question that comes out there by why would you be penalized? In their mind, they're penalized, whether or not that's really the true factor, just because it's more rural or more populated. And it's an odd thing to think about when you're saying that, just for like-minded companies that do the same thing for each, or like-minded individuals that do the same thing, they're going to have to pay more or less.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head in terms of our desire to make sure that people are able to enjoy the same costs, the same prices, regardless of where they live. We live in Maine because we love the state. We live in Maine because it's the value of life and the quality of life. It's to say it's more expensive in Aroostook versus York can defy logic at times. And so what we need to do is really work within those geographic rating areas to see what we can do over time to bring those costs more in alignment.
We're talking with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well,
All you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB, AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're having our final segment here with Kevin Lewis, CEO of Maine Community Health Options. Kevin, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about healthcare. We're talking about people's lives here, right? And you're talking about a new organization. It's brand spanking new. It's been heavily subsidized. It's a nonprofit. And somebody might say, why would I trust that organization when I have always gone to my trusted large company that currently provides health insurance? What are some of the guarantees that the organization is going to provide to the public? What's the transparency involved? How are we going to measure quality of the network? I know that, should we have an answer in about 30 seconds? No problem, right? Easy stuff.
This is right at the heart of where we should be focusing our energy. So great questions. The first is Maine Community Health Options is coming into existence because of significant federal loans, but it's not a subsidy per se, because these are loans. This is financing that we are obligated to pay back, and we really look at it as a privilege to be in this position. To start this new health insurance company, nonprofit, member-led, right here in our state, by Maine people and for Maine people, and so that was the financing allowed us to get to the table, and the Bureau of Insurance has been very diligent about kicking the tires, looking under the hood, so to speak, ensuring that we have the wherewithal to be a sustainable health insurance company that's here for the long haul. I can assure all the listeners that we are indeed committed to being here, not just in 14, and not just in 2015, but for decades to come. When we talk about transparency, it's hardwired into our very structure, and I'm happy to talk more about how it is that we can uphold that accountability in Maine people.
How about on the quality side? How will the organization hold itself accountable? Certainly, regulators will hold you accountable in some ways, but how is the organization going to hold itself accountable to its members?
We do that first and foremost in terms of our premium pricing going forward. Our smart use of premium dollars will impact tomorrow's rates. So that's number one. Number two is the governance model, in that it's member-led. So the people calling us on the phone, the people who are subscribing as members this fall and through the open enrollment, which goes all the way through March 31st of 2014, could very well be the directors on the board. And so that there is accountability back to the membership, because their representatives sit on the board and constitute a majority of the board. And then we are being watched not only at the state level but the federal level, and have a considerable amount of audit scrutiny, both financial and operational.
Well, you've provided a lot of information today, a lot, and I think that it's really pertinent and important for people to understand this, and they really should go to your website and take a look at this. But you know, the audience, I always like to ask at the end, tell me a little about you. What's your background? What brought you to this point where you're now the CEO of the organization? How'd you get here? Tell us.
Well, sure, David. I was pleased to lead the Primary Care Association, the main Primary Care Association, for just over a decade, and was involved in a number of different innovative ways to positively impact quality of care and as you know, to positively impact access to care, and yet again and again found ourselves stymied by the payment system. And that we really are on a kind of a fee-for-service or a pay-for-volume system that doesn't allow for the kind of innovation that we really need. So when this we started working on different means and avenues of putting payment reform into place, and when this opportunity came up to establish a consumer-operated-oriented plan, it is the perfect fit. And fortunately, I was able to join forces with others of the same mindset, and we have a fabulous team that provides hundreds and hundreds of experience years being applied to this very concept.
Well, it's certainly good to know that there is a new option out there, that there is a choice that can be made. And certainly listeners need to think to themselves, what exactly am I going to do in the remaining months here of 2013? As I start thinking about 2014, HR professionals, business leaders, if you haven't really wrapped your head around this yet, it's time. You know, you can certainly understand that there's some delays, but there are some things that are still moving forward. And so you need to make sure that you're ready and that you're talking to professionals. And certainly, Kevin here, I know you are available if they need to call. What number can they reach and how can they reach out to you?
Well, they can call us on our 1-800, toll-free line. It's 1-855-MCHO for me. And they can also reach us at our office line, 207-402-3330.
That's great. And of course, after this show, everybody can listen to the broadcast again. It is podcasted at hrpowerhour.com, and we'll have all the information and links there for you. Kevin, thank you for being on the show.
David, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And now your HR tip of the week. It's October. It is that time to think about your compensation strategy for 2014. It's time to think about what is it that you're going to be doing in the next year as you plan for raises, increases, or restructuring. So take the time today to really sit down and map out a strategy. It is time for succession planning. It is time to really make sure that you're prepared here at the last few months of 2013 for your 2014 progress. That's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Dan Rose. He is the chair of the Labor and Employment Department of the law firm of Drummond & Woodsum. We are going to be talking about privacy, the expectation of privacy, why employers need to care about it, having to do with hiring, misconduct, theft, and making sure that you're doing the right things when it comes to video, GPS, medical records, ADA. Lots of acronyms, lots of fun on the HR Power Hour next week. Thank you for listening and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.